Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 52, and we're going to continue with Matthew chapter 22 and verse 15. Last time, we're covering this story here, a parable that Jesus Christ was giving his disciples to make a point that people who are not going to have the garments of righteousness on them, the wedding garment, you see, that's basically what it is, the garment of righteousness. In other words, those who are not obedient to the law of God. And that's only where they're going to be attired with the truth, with the light, with the knowledge of God, with the righteousness of God, with the nature and character of God, even though God is going to call many, as we read in verse 10, those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all whom they found, everybody. You see, the invitation was to everybody, you're all welcome, but there are conditions. A lot of people think, you know, there are no conditions. Come as you are. You see, they go through the first part of this statement and forget about the other part. You see? And so they just go into the highways and the byways and go all around the earth, and they just call everybody to the wedding, so to speak, to a relationship with Jesus Christ, and they fail to teach them that unless they obey the commandments of God, which they do not teach them to begin with because they themselves don't believe in them, they claim they were done away with, all that, you know, whatever kind of life they're going to live from that point on, you know, they can believe in Jesus Christ all they want and praise Him all they want, you know, and have a change of life to a degree, you see. I would not avail them anything if they are not attired with a garment of righteousness, if they are not obedient to the law of God, as Christ made it very plain. If you want to enter into life, keep the commandments. You don't keep the commandments, you will not enter into life. So all that you have done will be in vain. And he told them, don't think that I came to do away with the Torah or the prophets. Why? He is the one that gave it to them. Why would he do it away, you know, do away with it when it is his very nature and character? That's how you know what is righteous, as Paul said. How would I ever know what is sin unless the law said don't covet or don't steal or don't do this? And that's only a part of it, the 10 oracles, and then came all the other laws that God gave them, as he told Israel, be you holy, for I am holy. How? He told them not to eat unclean food. He told them to do this or not to do that. That's the only way to holiness, and without holiness we are not going to see God. And so these people came, the good, that obeyed the law of God, that had the Spirit of God because they did obey the law of God, because God gives His Spirit, as Peter said, only to those who obey Him. Not only believe in Him, you see, believe that He's the Son of God. The devil believes that He's the Son of God and all of His demons. And they worship Him whenever they see Him. That doesn't do them any good. You see? So if people think, you know, that's all it takes, just believe in Jesus Christ and that He's the Son of God. And that's all there is to it. Well, obviously, they're going to be disappointed and they will be speechless when the time comes and Christ will say, okay, you believed in Me, now where are the garments of righteousness? Where is your character? You see, character can be built only by the mere fact that we are obedient to the law of God, because that's how we become attired, and that's how His Word abides in us. So this is basically what He's saying here, you know. Don't take My grace, you know, the grace of God, cheaply. As later on Paul would say, you know, that they turn the grace of God into license to do whatever they want. You see, so they decide on their own, well, this is not necessary for salvation, this law is done away with, Christ nailed it to the cross, or the other thing, well, Christ did it for me, and so forth and so forth. Well, these people are naked, you see, and so they appear before God and they do not have the garment of righteousness. And Jesus Christ said, well, that's the way we're going to treat them. You know, they don't like to have My nature in them, My laws in them, they're not willing to abide by the law, of which I told them, don't think that I came to do away with the Torah or the prophets. You see, not one jot or one tittle shall ever pass from the law until all things be fulfilled, and these people were not willing to listen to that. Well, their fate would be, and the fate of almost the overwhelming majority of those who call themselves Christians, you see, members of the so-called Christianity, religion, is going to be just like this. They are going to be bound hand and foot, and taken away and cast into outer darkness. You see? In other words, they're not going to be in the kingdom. It's not necessarily mean that they're going to be thrown into the lake of fire, because obviously the lake of fire is not outer darkness. You know, the fire goes on. There is no darkness there. There's a lot of light. What he's saying here, you know, they're going to be out. You see? They're going to be accepted. And you have to understand also the entirety of the story, because obviously all of them were deceived. They don't know the right from the left. They've been lied to. They were born into lies and deceptions by those who deceived them, by those who themselves were deceived, because that's all they knew, you see. So obviously God is going to have mercy on them, but they're not going to be in the first resurrection. As Paul later on will talk about, blessed are those who are going to be in the first resurrection, the better resurrection. All the rest, as you read in Revelation, the rest of the dead live not until the 1,000 years are over, and then God is going to resurrect them, and he's going to give them their first opportunity by opening their eyes, showing them they've been lied to and deceived, you see, and giving them another heart, a heart to know him and to desire his path and his way and his law and to walk in it. And then, you know, they'll have a choice, either to follow in his footsteps, obey the commandments, and, you know, have the garments of righteousness on, or make the decision of going the other way, and that'll be the end of them. That's why he's saying here, you know, many are called. Yes, many are called. The call goes out to many. It doesn't mean that the many are going to be chosen. Now, if they're all going to be obedient to the law of God and put on Jesus Christ, his nature, mind, and character revealed through his law, that's one thing. But since this is not what people do, unfortunately, only few are going to be chosen. As Jesus Christ made very plain, broad is the way and many go through it. These are the many who are being called. You know, they just want to come for the fun, you see, but they want to do their own thing. They're not willing to abide by the law of God and totally change their lifestyle and their way of life and thinking, philosophies, and you know, whatever they brought with them. They're not willing to do it, you know. I'll worship you, Jesus Christ. I'll praise you and honor you and all that, but don't tell me how to live my life. That's their attitude. Well, they are the ones who are going the broad way, but narrow is the path. You see, narrow is the road, and only few find it, because only few are willing to be obedient to the law of God. You see? And that's unfortunately, and the tragedy is where you find the overwhelming majority of those who claim to be the followers of Christ, at least in name, most of them know that they're not really practicing, you know, what they're supposed to be. You see? And yet they're still lying by claiming that they're Christians, and many of them hang around with a cross, you know, on their neck, and they know that they're not walking in the faith, in the truth, in the light. They're not obedient to the law of God. You see, they know very little about their religion, the doctrines of their religion to begin with, which is not, in most cases anyway, the religion of God, just the concoctions of men. So even that they don't do. Therefore, only the very few, the very elect, are going to be chosen, and they are the ones, unfortunately, oftentimes will get persecuted by the others who walk in the broad way. And so we continue in verse 15, then the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle him in his talk. That's the nature of men. You see, they don't like the truth. They're going to speak evil against you. They're going to try to do everything, you know, to trip you. And they do it to this very day. That's the nature of men, because the nature of the devil is in man, and it's not the nature of God. Verse 16, and they sent him, that is, sent to him their disciples, that is, Pharisees, with the Herodians, people of the party of Herod. You know, Herod was the king, and after that he had several sons, and each one of them reigned in different places. But, you know, there were those people. In other words, they were going to bring some power behind them, not only religious, but the civil government, you know, of the day, of their own, beside Rome, under Rome. And they thought, well, you know, we'll trip him and take over and put an end to him and shut his mouth, and that's it. And we're going to continue to do our own thing. And it's been like that for the past 2,000 years. They began to look upon the servants of God who walked in the narrow road, who were obedient to the law of God, as heretics, as Judaizers, you see, and so forth. And things haven't changed since that time. Most people were born into that deception. They don't know any better, including the high and the mighty in all the religions. And so they were sending these disciples and the Herodians, saying, Teacher, we know that you are true. You see, they're already condemning themselves by speaking that way, showing how deceitful they are, and the spirit of lies is in them. So, they say, we know that you are true, and teach the way of God in truth. You see? That's the name of the religion, the way. It's not Christianity. It's not any other name that people gave to it later on, basically in the pagan church that called itself Christian, followers of Christ, and they were anything but that. It's a way. As David said, blessed and happy is the man who walks in the way. That way was established from the Garden of Eden. It's a way of life where God dictates every step of the way by his law. Every testimony and precept and judgment, you see, tells you what is right, what is wrong, what is of God, what is not. They lead you in the way. That's the candle, you see, that should be there at your feet, the lamp, to light your way as you walk toward God instead of toward the devil. And so this is the way it has always been called from the beginning of time, the way. And the apostles later on used that terminology all the time because that was from the Garden of Eden. It's nothing new. And yet people come along and invent their own names and give it a name. Christianity, they call it, or they call it Judaism, or they call it this, or they call it that. You see? God called it the way. And he has only one way. And any people on the face of the earth, you know, come up with their own names. And, you know, all those religions out there, they all have their different names. And within the religion, you know, the major religions, they have divisions among them, and each one of them gives those divisions, you know, their own names and so forth. Anything but the way. There is only one way, either the broad way or the narrow road, the narrow way. That's all. That's the name of the religion of God, the way. You see? He does not call his people by all those names that people come up with. And so people who walk in the way, as Christ said, who are my fathers and brothers and sisters and so forth, are the people who do the will of God. How do you do the will of God? Well, you walk in the way. You see, the way that he paved, every rock and every stone in that way was paved by God, not by man. There are no church doctrines. There is no such a thing. You see, churches do not invent doctrines. God does. And if you do not walk in the way that God paved, we are out of the way, off the way. You see? We walk in the way of man, the way of the devil, the way of his demons, the way of his cohorts upon this earth. You see? It's as simple as that. So here they are acknowledging the fact that he's teaching the way of God in truth. Nor do you care about anyone, for you do not regard the person of man. Now, by now you would think, oh, look at those, you know, very devout men. A lot of religious people sound like that. Lip service. But where is their heart? Where was the heart of these people who came to trip him and to test him, you see, in order to destroy him? That's what religious people are all about, oftentimes, unfortunately. They're deceitful to the core. And they're so deceitful, they're not even listening to what they are saying. Had these people been listening to what they were saying, had they had the fear of God, they would never have behaved the way they did. You see? That's how the devil works. Appearing as an angel of light. As the Apostle Paul said, no marvel, you know, that the devil appears as an angel of light. And it's not a marvel that his ministers, he's got a lot of ministers, the overwhelming majority of the spiritual leaders on earth, they appear as ministers of righteousness. I mean, you listen to these words and say, wow, well, you know, those are wonderful people, good people. You see, devout people, religious people. Yes, but what's in their heart? That's a different story. And most people don't see that. They see the outside of the facade, you know, the religion of their leaders, and they don't see what's inside. But God does. They cannot deceive God. And so they say, tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Why would they ask a question like that? You see, they want to get him for sedition against Rome and destroy him. These are the people that claim that he's a man coming from God, teaching the truth. You see? And yet they ask him this question. But Jesus perceived their wickedness. When we look on leaders, spiritual leaders who speak high and loftily about God and his word and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, or in any given religion, whatever they say, do we perceive the wickedness that is in them? You see, Christ said, by their fruits you shall know them, but if we ourselves do not know the law of God, and do not know the kind of life that those people have and what really goes on in their minds and hearts, you can see it by their actions, how are we going to perceive their wickedness? You see, a lot of people are led astray because of that. They just look at the facade, at the outside of the building, and they don't look inside, and they are being deceived. But Jesus Christ perceived their wickedness and said, "Why do you test me, you hypocrites?" You see, as we mentioned earlier, a hypocrite means, you know, in Hebrew, tzavua, which means painted. You see, you take an ugly-looking building, and you take coats of paints, you know, any color that you want, and you paint over it, and then you look at the building and say, "Wow, it's beautiful, nice." You see? Yes, but what's under it? You see? Now, for a building, it's one thing, you know, you beautify it. But when you do it for a human being, when from the outside it looks painted, nice, pretty, but what's inside is ugly and filthy and polluted, what difference does it make how beautiful it looks on the outside? You see, it doesn't make any difference to God, because God looks for truth in the inward part, and if it's not there, the facade doesn't mean anything to him. And so you find all those people go there, you know, they attire themselves, and they sing beautiful songs and beautiful melodies, they have choirs, and do all kind of things like that, and they honor and worship God and praise him by their lips, and dance before him and raise their hands, and all this show of religiosity, and their heart is far away from him. And that's why he says, "In vain do you worship me." You see? Most people do that. And they're not willing to look at the mirror of the law and to see themselves for what they are, you see, and cleanse themselves. As James said, you know, you double-minded, you know, cleanse yourself. Cleanse your minds, you know, your head, your hands, you know, you're double-minded. Don't be that kind of people when you come before God. And so, this is what they are, he said. That's what you are. You're hypocrites. You see, you're people of wickedness, and yet you pretend to be worshippers of God, and you deceive all the people that come and listen to you and your words, and they think you're the great man of God. And to this very day, they do it. You see it on television, you see it, you know, you hear it on the radio, and you see it in places of worship, you know, be it Judaism or Christianity or Islam or any other place. What goes inside the heart? That's what God looks at. You see, you cannot deceive him. People are deceived, but not God. So he says, "Show me the tax money." They thought that they were going to outsmart him. So they brought him a denarius, and he said to them, "Whose image and inscription is this?" They said to him, "Caesar's." And he said to them, "Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." You got it from Caesar, give it back to him. You got it from your government, give it back to them. When you get things from me, you give it back to me. You see, God is not interested in the things of men. And yet, what is it that all those preachers are all about, oftentimes? "Give me money, give me money, give me money." Who printed the money? Men did, you know, print the money. Well, give, you know, the money to men. You see, and all the needs of men. What is it that God gave us? He gave us life. He gave us a creation. You see, that's why the tithing was made always only on the produce that God himself had created, you see, and sustained. And even when people were supposed to save the tithe, he said, when you go to Jerusalem and you come and appear before me, you know, the way is too long because, you know, you cannot take your cattle over there and all kind of things like that, and produce might rot along the way, perish. Well, sell it, get some money. When you come to Jerusalem, get rid of the money. Buy merchandise of the natural things, of the cattle, of the animals, you know, that I created and the produce that I created, and with that come and worship me. He's not interested in the creation of men. You see? And these people forgot that. So they were trying to deceive him with something that is, to begin with, a matter of ignorance on their part. They did not understand as they should have. Though they know the law and they teach the law. You see? They know all these things. But in their hypocrisy and the deceitfulness of their heart, they forgot all these things. And they thought that they can come before their God and Maker and Creator, even though they didn't recognize him as such, and deceive him. You see, and outwit him. Well, you can't do that. A lot of people do it. You know, they do all kind of evil things. Under heaven, people don't know it. People don't see it. God sees it. And then they come before God, you know, in the churches, in the synagogues, and all kind of places, of religious places, and they bring their checkbooks and money and all that, and they donate and make sure that everybody knows about it, you see. And God is not interested in all that trash, because that's all it is to Him. He wants our heart, you see. If our heart is there, it's a different story. Now, if we take some money that we earned by the sweat of our brow, which God to begin with gave us, you know, the strength to be able to do so, and then we use it, you know, to serve God, you know, to care for the needs of people, after all, that's the nature of things. You know, to buy things, you need money. So there's nothing wrong with money by itself. But when people make money the God, you see, when they make a substitute for the worship of God with money, that's where the problem is. And this is where people were, and so he told them. You know, you bring yourself under dominion and subjection to Caesar, and that's his money, we'll give it to him. That's not what God is interested in. And so obviously, they were speechless again, you see. And they never learned, they continued to do so. So when they heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. What else could they do? You know, they were ashamed before all. You see, they were outsmarted. And the same day, the Sadducees, around the same time, the Sadducees who say there is no resurrection. Mind you, who are the Sadducees? You see, the word Sadducees comes from Tzadok. Tzadok was a high priest in the days of David, and then especially Solomon. And that family became the family that was in charge of the temple. And so all the descendants and all the people that joined, you know, that party, so to speak, among the leaders, spiritual leaders, became known as Sadducees, Tzadokim in Hebrew, house of Tzadok. And they, had a lot of abundance and plenty, being, you know, in the temple cult, as some people call it. And oftentimes they're liberalized, you know, as the manner of people is, you know, they get a lot of money and they do well, they see no need for God anymore, they do their own thing. And so whenever they had foreign dominations, they would, you know, in order to retain their power and authority, you know, they would cater to the emperor or the ruler or whatever, and in the process, you know, they begin to water down their own convictions and faith. Well, when we do that, we obviously begin to lose knowledge and understanding and perception. You see, and the real comprehension of the law of God. And that was one of their problems. They lost the ability to recognize the truth and to understand the resurrection. And they came up with this idea, well, you know, God created us on this earth and that's all there is to it and we should be thankful for it and that's it. No life after. You see? Mind you, these are the priests. They're serving in the temple. And people go to them to offer their sacrifices, you see, before God. And the parents of Jesus Christ had done it, and Jesus Christ commanded his servants, you know, disciples, or the people that he healed, you know, in accordance to the law of Moses, to go to the priest and offer the sacrifice, in spite of the fact that he knew that these people themselves do not believe in major teachings like that, major realities like the resurrection. So obviously these people were never going to believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ, unless something was changing their brain and their minds. And actually, thousands of the Pharisees, that is, of the Sadducees beside the Pharisees, actually did change their mind when he was resurrected and they saw signs and wonders and they became his disciples. You see? Well, at this point, they don't believe. And so they say that there is no resurrection. And they came to him and asked him, again, trying to trip him, saying, "Teacher, Moses said that if a man dies having no children, his brother shall marry his wife and raise up offspring for his brother." And again, they forget. Who is the one that gave the law to Moses? It's God. So it's not Moses. It's not a man. It's not a religion of men. It's not a Mosaic law. There is no such a thing. It's a law of God. And God gave Moses, you know, the law as a messenger boy to give it to Israel. That's as simple as that. And Moses did not go about telling people, "Well, you are my disciples. Call yourself, you know, Moses' disciples." You see, he pointed them toward God, and Jesus Christ pointed everyone toward God, not toward himself. And he told them, "You worship God, our Heavenly Father," you see. And there are people since that time, religious leaders, that give their denomination or whatever, you know, their own name, or, you know, people that come after them, you know, use the names of those leaders for the religion or the sect or the organization they follow. And they became known as such, you know, Methodist, Baptist, this and that and the other thing. That's not of God, that's of men. And so This, you know, people say, well, Moses said that. Well, yes, Moses said that because God told him to say that. And now he said, they said to him, now there were with us seven brothers. So first, you know, they talk about the law that God gave Moses to give Israel. And now there are seven brothers. The first died after he had married. Obviously, it never happened. Just, you know, they're trying to trick him. And having no offspring, left his wife to his brother, and that was the law. Likewise, the second also, and the third even to the seventh. So, seven brothers, all married the same woman, and all died. Last of all, the woman died also. Therefore, in the resurrection, which they don't believe in to begin with, so you see the hypocrisy of the people, and they thought that was clever, you know, let's trick him. In the resurrection, whose wife of the seven will she be? For they all had her. They're all married to her. So when they're all resurrected, what's going to happen? You see? Now, they understood also, even though they didn't believe in the resurrection, that the knowledge of the resurrection at the time was that when the resurrection comes, people are going to be still flesh and blood and living on this earth and marrying and giving in marriage. And what they did not understand is there are two kinds of resurrection. The resurrections of the saints were going to become spirit beings because they've already developed the nature of God. He was formed in them, Jesus Christ. They don't need to be flesh and blood and go through it again, you see, as they did before. And then all those who are not the saints, who are not going to be resurrected in the first resurrection, in the better resurrection when Christ descends, if they're not alive, as Revelation says very plainly, the rest of the dead live not until the 1,000 years are over, then they're going to be resurrected in the second resurrection, you see. And this time it's going to be all those who ever lived. And that's what you read in Ezekiel 37, and the Jewish community to this day does not understand it. It used to, in the past, that it's not talking about the resurrection of the saints. It's talking about the resurrection of the end of the millennium. You see, the end of the 1,000-year rule. Then God is going to resurrect the entirety of the whole house of Israel, all those who ever lived, and all mankind, obviously. You see, so they're confusing one with the other. And if you don't have the entirety of the story, obviously you'll get confused too. And most people do when they read this. They don't understand it, really. And so they said in the resurrection, who is going to be her husband? You know, all of them were the husbands. Jesus answered and said to them, you are mistaken, or you are ignorant. And they were. And yet they continued to serve in that office because nobody else could be a priest unless you are a priest. So in essence, Israel was stuck with it. And in essence, you might say God also was stuck with them. You see? Now, the Pharisees could be teachers of the law, yes, that was allowed, even though the priest should have been the teacher, but the Pharisee could never go to the temple and officiate in the temple because that was given by oath only to the priesthood, and that could not be changed. So God allowed them to continue. In other words, God allowed people whom he knows are not as knowledgeable as they should be and ignorant still to continue in their office and to serve his people, because still, you know, they were doing a good measure of their responsibility in the temple according to the law of God. And the law of Moses, which he gave, you know, to give to Israel. And so he tells them, you know, you are ignorant, you are mistaken, not knowing the scriptures, know the power of God. Now, it doesn't mean they didn't know any of the scriptures. You see, they were the priest. What it means is, you know, he's talking about resurrection, whatever other things they did not understand. In other words, he says, you really do not understand everything about the scriptures as you should. And you do not know the power of God. You know, you can die, so what? God can resurrect you. So they did not know that power. They were not willing to know it. They did not believe it. For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels of God in heaven. Now, people in their ignorance, when they read this, not knowing the entirety of the story, they begin to invent their own doctrines. You see? They begin to believe, well, here it is. That's the only resurrection when everybody is going to be resurrected. You see, not knowing about two resurrections, one for the saints at the coming of Christ, the one that Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 15, is only for the saints. They are going to be, you know, resurrected to the resurrection of life, you see. And all the rest of the dead are going to remain in the grave until the end of the 1,000 years. So he's not talking here about the physical resurrection at the end of the millennium. He's talking about the resurrection of the saints at his coming. And then, you know, the second doctrine they invent, you know, well, they're like angels. So now they think, you know, when you die, you become an angel. He didn't say they're going to be angels. He said they're going to be like angels. In what way? Angels don't marry. In other words, they're going to be spirit beings. You see? So they're going to be like angels of God in heaven, because God created man to be in his image and in his likeness, to be born into his family. And he created man after the God kind, and he created animals after the angel kind. You see, most people don't even know how angels are, because angels are animals. We're not going to become animals when we're resurrected. Angels are oxes and eagles and all those angelic hosts. They're all described in the Bible from beginning until the end as looking like animals. You see, and when God came down to smite all the gods of Egypt, this is what he was smiting, and all the animals, you know, that the Egyptians worshipped, the snake and the beetle and the frogs, all those were the gods of Egypt. You see? Why, you know, why did they worship them? Because that's how angels look like. You see? So when God created man to look like him, and when he created animals, he created them to look like the angels. So you have to understand what he's talking about here, that we are going to be like the angels of God. We're not going to look like them, nor being on their level, but much higher than they are. We're going to ascend to the level of Jesus Christ and sit on his throne, as he said, "He that overcomes shall sit with me on my throne as I overcame." And that's exactly what all the apostles later on taught. You know, be it the apostle Paul, who talked about us becoming the heirs of God, you see, not heirs of angels, but heirs of God. And, you know, just like all children, when they receive all the inheritance from their father, they become the heirs of their parents. And the Apostle John was saying in 1 John chapter 3, "Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us." It's the Father, you know, that gives us to us, you see, this love, because he's the one that begets us to become his sons, not Jesus Christ. We do not become the sons of Jesus Christ, we become the son of the Father. He's the head of the religion, he's the head of all things. And so he says, "What? Look at the manner of love that the Father has bestowed on us, that we should be called the children of God." We're not called the children of Christ, but the children of God. You see? And Christ is also a deity. You see? Also God. You know, that's all God means, Elohim, deity. Both of them are deities. But one is El Elyon, the Most High. So again, you know, you have to understand the semantics of the language here. Otherwise, people get confused. You know, especially when they read, you know, on one hand, you know, there is only one God and one Lord throughout the entirety of the writings of the disciples of Christ. And then they go to the Hebrew Scriptures and they read again, you know, there's only one God. And they really don't understand what they're reading. You see, you got to know the entirety of the story. Both of them are deities. And God came from goat, you know, for deity, German. Both of them are deities. Both of them are God. But one is the Most High. As Christ said, "My Father is greater than I." So, John talks about the mere fact that the Father is at the head of, you know, of the family, is the head of the family, not Christ. Christ is the head of the body. And we're going to be his children. "Therefore, the world does not know us because it did not know him." You see, certainly the people do not know God. A lot of people worship Christ and they couldn't care less about the Father. They think, well, he's the God of Israel, the God of the Jews. We're not interested too much in him. That's, you know, the old harsh monster, you know, the God of the Old Testament with all the, you know, killings and bloodshed and the strict law and things like that. We don't want any of that. We've got our new God, our new religion, and so forth. Well, an awful lot of ignorance out there. And yet they call themselves religious people, you know, great denominations and all kind of ranks that they have, and it's all in vain, unfortunately, tragically. And so he says, "Therefore the world does not know us because it does not know him." He made it very plain, the world does not know God. They do not know Jesus Christ, and they don't know the Father either. They think they do. "Beloved," he said, "now we are children of God," in verse 2, "and it has not yet been revealed what we shall be." We don't know exactly how we're going to look like in the resurrection. "But this we know," he said, "that when he is revealed," speaking about Christ in specific, "we shall be like him, just like Christ, just like his Father. As I said, I and the Father are one." We too are going to become deities, not angels, far above angels. We're going to be members of the very family of God, spirit beings living in eternity, having his nature, his character, his mind, his personality. You see, we're going to be in the stamp and the image of God, just like Christ is. That's the reason why from divinity he became flesh and blood, and from flesh and blood back to divinity, to pave the way for us. to join him into divinity, because originally we came from God. When God created our bodies, he put a spirit in us, and that spirit came from him. You see? So in that sense, you might say we've been living forever in the Father. You see? And then we become spirit beings, and then he gives us a spirit body, which is just like his, you know, with different variations of brightness, as Paul talks about it, you know, just like the stars in heaven, they have different brightness. So would the sons of God become based on their works on this earth, and the reward will be based on that. You see, not all of us are going to be exactly the same, and Christ to begin with will, you know, will always have the preeminence, and the Father will always be the head of the family. There is never going to be any change in that. But you see, he made it very plain. And so everyone who has this hope in him and believes this knowledge and understanding, which most people don't, you see, Christianity has no knowledge of that whatsoever. You've got all these lies and deceptions. When you die, you go to heaven. There is no such a place to go, because heaven is coming down to earth. And that thing, you know, when we die, we're going to be angels. Or, you know, whatever they come up with. See, all based on lies. But John makes it very plain, like all the prophets of Israel, that is the prophets of God, they're not the prophets of Israel, and all the disciples of Christ said the same thing. Everyone who has this hope in him purifies himself just as he is pure. We have to be pure like him, holy like him, righteous like him, you see, good like him, and all that can be achieved only if the law of God, which is spirit, is planted in us and we obey it and it becomes us. That becomes our nature. And then when the nature of the divinity is in us, then he can give us a divine body and we live forever on his level. You see, his divine beings still under him. You see? And so he continues, John, whoever commits sin also commits lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. So sin is a transgression of the law. And since most people walk in that way of life, unfortunately the broad way, and they are lawless people, obviously they don't understand the major teachings of the nature of God, of the religion of God, of the way of God, and they've got their own religion, extremely inferior in nature and teachings. Some truth, a lot of lies in it, vomit in the sight of God, and they think that they are going to appear before Christ and be just like him and enter into the wedding supper and marry him. God is not going to marry somebody below him. Nobody's going to marry an animal. If you're a human being, you don't marry an animal. You see? You marry somebody on your level. A woman is on the level of a man. You see? They're both human beings. And Christ is going to marry just like he did in the past when he married Israel. He didn't marry somebody below him. That's why we're already called Elohim. As you read in the Psalms, Psalms 82, verse 6, I said, you are all Elohim. You see? People don't believe it. They call themselves Jews or Christians, because they're all in ignorance and darkness until the time comes when God removes the veil from their head. Then they will see what it is all about and how vain, you know, the religion was all this time, how much they worked in darkness. So that's what Christ is saying to them. In the kingdom of God, they're going to be just like the angels of God. In other words, they don't marry. You see, they're spirit beings. No sex. But, you know, as for the rest who are going to be brought back to life, they're going to be brought back as physical human beings. They'll have, you know, marriage and sex and all the physical things, because they still need to develop the nature of God before God can give them a divine body. But concerning the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what was spoken to you by God, saying, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, and the one who said it is Jesus Christ. You see? He said, I am, because he was. And also the one above him who sent him also was the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. You see? Because both of them are Elohim. Both of them are eternal, Jehovah. You see? But one is greater than the other. And he said, God is not the God of the dead, but of the living. That's reality. You see? Which means that Moses already preached the resurrection. And yet they did not understand it, because they claim, well, we'll go only by Moses, and Moses nowhere did talk about the resurrection. Well, he shows them right here. Every time when he said that I am the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, that's what he was saying. How can he be their God unless he resurrects them and they stand before him and they live for eternity? You see? And they knew at the time, all of Israel knew at the time, there is no such a thing as, you know, as soon as you die, you go to heaven and you go to hell. They all knew when you die, you go to the grave. Well, if Abraham and Isaac and Jacob are in the grave, how is he their God? You see, unless he resurrects them and they live before him in his presence and become like him, he cannot be their God. And this Sadducees, unfortunately, being the priests, should have known better. Well, they didn't, because blindness descended on them, as we read earlier and described that in the first series in particular about Isaiah 6, when God blinded his own people, you see, because we're not willing to obey. And so when the multitude heard this, verse 33, they were astonished at his teaching. Why should they be? That's all knowledge, so to speak. They should have all been taught that, yet the fact was that the leaders of the congregation were so ignorant by that time, so blinded in many ways, they did not teach them all these matters. You see, that should have been all knowledge to them. And so they were amazed and they were astonished at his teaching. Shows you how much darkness was already upon Israel at the time. From the days of Isaiah, it became worse and worse and worse. You read Isaiah chapter 6 and you see the blindness that God placed on his people. And Isaiah 29, where he talks about the blindness that he put on the leaders, on the spiritual leaders, that made them blind, that they do not see their right from their left. So you can imagine how much more blind they are today. You see, because blind people continue to pass on their blindness to others, and things got darker and darker. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, because, you know, the Pharisees didn't like the Sadducees, Sadducees didn't like the Pharisees, well, they were pretty happy. So they gathered together, and then one of them, a lawyer, what does it mean, a lawyer? A teacher of the law, that's all it means. Nowadays, lawyer, you know, something totally different, you know, because they're lawyers in terms of the law of the land. This is a law, and are lawyers in terms of the law of God. They ask him a question, testing him and saying, they were not interested in knowing, you know, all this time, all these people, his people that should have known better, don't recognize their God, their maker, their redeemer, their deliverer, the Lord giver, you see, and they're constantly playing games with him. And yet, he being their husband, and they being his wife, even though they don't realize that, he was patient with them, he was long-suffering with them, he was kind to them. He did not mock them. He did not make fun of them. You see, he realized that they are in darkness. You know, they don't see, as I said, you know, at the end of the road, Father forgive them. They don't know what they are doing. You see? So he still loved them, and he loved them until the end. He gave his life for them, as well as for the entirety of the whole earth. And so they questioned him, testing him, teacher. You see, master, teacher, or rabbi, which is a great... They're asking, which is a great commandment in the law? You see, there are many laws, there are 613 in the law of Moses. They want to know which one of them is the greatest. Jesus said to him, you shall love the Lord your God. And here, you know, you hear only a part of the answer, obviously. You have to go to Mark and all the others, and they put the whole thing together, because it's not a complete answer here, because when you go later on, you realize that he began the statement, which is a great commandment, by saying this, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. That's how he began the answer, the reply to this question, which is the greatest, you know, commandment. And why did he say that? For the simple reason, if you're not willing to hear God, you see, if you're not willing to obey God, because the word hear and obey in Hebrew are the same, Shema Israel, the famous Shema Israel, Hear, O Israel, you see, and Israel was never willing to obey, generally speaking, or hear the words of God. So they repeat it in vain because they really don't mean it and they don't even know it, you see, because they're in ignorance and, you know, blind people don't know that they're blind, spiritually speaking. And so this is, you know, that was introduction to the great commandment. And if you are not willing to listen to hear God, what difference does it make that you go on and worship him and love him and praise him and do all the other things, all in vain? You see, you worship God in vain if you're not willing to hear him. Not what your teachers told you, but him. And here they had this problem. The reason why they're asking him, because they were not willing to listen to him. They were listening to their own teachers instead. And so he says, You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul and with all of your mind, as you read it in Deuteronomy 10, 12, and 36. This is the first commandment. That is the greatest one. And the second is like it. The second is just, you know, just as great as that one. You shall love your friend, in Hebrew, re'echa, not neighbor, your friend, as yourself. You see, because we're all sons of God, and if we cannot love our own brothers, children of God, just like ourselves, we don't love God. You see, so one does not work without the other. You cannot say, I love God, but I hate those people there. You know, they're below me, I'm holier than they. And we are the believers, they are the infidels, so let's go kill them. You see, they're not willing to become like us, and so forth. And so you see how we are all bearing false witness every time we show hatred, and we all do it. There's no human being who doesn't do it. We do it by nature, by selfishness, by putting down people, by insulting people, you see, by exalting ourselves above others, by not caring for the needs of others, you see, by being indiscreet, insensitive, inconsiderate, and so forth. We all know that we all do it. We're all guilty of it. He says, if you do not do one, what's the use in doing the other? Because the two of them are linked. Two of them are just as great. You see? And they obviously were not paying attention to that. And so he said, on these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. And we'll stop at this point. Again, this is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.